Accession number 9696, Reel 2.
Admiral Gibson, Reel 2. You were just saying that there was one particular incident concerning accidents on deck landing.
Oh yes, the three aeroplanes in the water, still in the ship, because they they tended to give us jobs to do that stretched our time to the limit of our fuel capacity. And people were rather inclined to run out of fuel and drop in the water.
Where did you go to after the Norwegian campaign?
We went to Gibraltar in the Ark Royal. We joined Force H.
When was this approximately?
Oh, Lord. Well, the only way I can time it is that as we passed past the southern part of England on our way out to Gibraltar, the evacuation was going on from Dunkirk. It was in the summer of 1940. I speak to you with my mouth away from the microphone. Is that all right?
Yes, that's all right. It'll pick it
good
up.
Good.
Yeah. Can you tell me about the role of Force H?
Yes. We were doing sorties into the Mediterranean, taking convoys through to Malta, passing ships through the Mediterranean to the other end, and we were involved in the bombardment of Oran, in which our skuas were once again fighting, but this time, unfortunately, we were fighting the French. Now, the French had the Duettine 520 fighter, which was much better than the skua, and we lost two people in the squadron with them. It was all a very nasty business.
Did you feel it at the time?
Oh, yes, very much so. Very much so.
What was the calibre of the French opposition?
Oh, very good. And there was more to it than that, too, because there was a very strong element of hate in the French opposition. I mean, they really were in a very bad temper, and unsurprisingly, we were destroying their fleet off Oran. Actually, our captain, who was Cedric Holland, he was a most delightful man, and he had been our naval attaché in Paris, and he was chosen to go, as you know, to act as sort of ambassador with Admiral Jansoul, who had the French fleet.
What particular targets did you personally go for in Oran? Do you remember?
Oh, we were just protecting the fleet against French bombers. And we weren't engaged with French fighters. The Devadine 520. They didn't try to bomb us at all. They were firing. The Ark Royal was being fired at by the batteries. I remember that. It wasn't frightfully dangerous because the shore batteries didn't come very close. But it was very interesting because they were using coloured bursts. Which, one of their shells hit the sea, it came up all red or blue or something. Then after that, shortly after that, we went to Dakar. We went to Freetown first, where we acquired some French colonels who had a funny sort of French aeroplane. They were going to fly ashore when we got to Dakar, which they did, and they were immediately captured. But then we went to Dakar, which was a from our point of view, was a complete shambles. I mean, some of us were shot down there by the French. And the French came out and tried to attack our ships with rather primitive sort of bombs. They're dropping shells, actually, from their airplanes, things like that. But then once again, they were in a very bad temper. I and my observer were flying over HMS Resolution when she was torpedoed. We saw the torpedoes running and tried to warn the Resolution. But of course, using the Morse code and all that sort of stuff, our warning didn't get through. And we just watched. I remember seeing her port cutter suddenly take off and go up in the air. She was hit on the port side. And she had to be towed back to Freetown eventually. It was all very miserable and unsuccessful.
Did you personally bring any of the French planes down, either at Oran or Dakar?
No. No.
Were there many of them?
I can't remember. I don't think there were, no. No.
You still had the skewers, of course.
We still had skewers.
Which seemed the most dangerous of the two battles, Oran or Dakar?
Well, I think Oran, because they had the French fighters there. I don't remember seeing any French fighters at Dakar.
What were you involved in after Dakar?
Well, after Dakar, we were involved in quite a lot of fighting in the Mediterranean with mostly against the Italian Air Force. And we found them quite easy to deal with, actually. The skewers could catch up the Savoia 79s and cant float planes and things, and we used to shoot them down. And after a few months of that, or it might have been weeks, I don't remember. It was a very pleasant existence, mostly, because we spent a lot of time in Gibraltar, and we used the yacht club there, and there was a lot of sailing and swimming and things, and fighting in between. We passed through aircraft carriers with the fighters to Malta once or twice. And after that, the Ark Royal went home to recommission, refit. And we flew ashore in Scotland, and we were re-equipped with Fulmars and joined the Formidable, which was a new ship then.
How did the Fulmar compare?
Formidable?
No, the Fulmar with the skewer.
It was a bit faster. It wasn't really a fighter, though. It was a hideous kind of thing. Quite easy to fly.
How do you mean hideous?
Well, it was a sort of... It was a bit like the Fairy Battle to look at. It didn't have an awful lot of speed. I don't remember what its top speed was. We could still catch up with Savoia 79s and things like that. It would be wrong to say that it was a great improvement. It had eight guns. It had eight forward-firing guns, like a Spitfire. Oh, that was a very good thing. And we had a measure of RT that worked, so we could do a certain amount of voice communication. But it wasn't a fighter.
What action?
But one thing about it was it wasn't a dive bomber either. So we didn't have to do any of this charge of the light brigade business.
Did you, in the Mediterranean, did you attack Italian ships?
You mean in the skewers?
With either.
No, we didn't.
Or Italian land targets?
No, we didn't. We didn't operate as dive bombers in the Mediterranean in our skewers. I think I'm right in saying that. Anyway, when we got into the Formidable, we went out to the Mediterranean, round the Cape, and stopped in at the Cape for a bit and had a good time. Then we went up to through the Suez Canal, where the ship went aground and stayed aground for about 3 hours, I think. And then we operated with the Mediterranean fleet in the eastern end. We relieved the Illustrious, which had been bombed by Junkers 87s, and had gone to America to be repaired. We had a lot of fighting in that eastern end of the Mediterranean. All of which, I don't remember the sequence of events, but I mean, we took part in the Battle of Matapan and many other operations of various kinds.
What exactly did you do in the Battle of Matapan?
Well, I was with my wingman, Petty Officer Theobald, and we escorted the 826, I think, on some of their torpedo attacks. We did actually manage to shoot down a German aeroplane. There was a Junkers 88 suddenly appeared. And Theobald and I didn't really have much warning of it, so we attacked it head on. But it was shot down. It went straight in the water. When we got to, I remember we also, in the morning attack, we strafed the bridge of the Vittorio Venezia, the battleship. Actually, years later, when I was captain of the Dainty, I met the gunnery officer, Vittorio Venezia, who had been on the bridge at the time. He was then at the Italian Naval Academy at Livorno, where I was visiting with my ship. We had a very friendly chat about it. I gather we frightened him anyway, if nothing else.
He admitted he was scared, did he?
Well, I should think he probably would have been, with 2 8-gun fighters striving the bridge.
Can you remember what he said to you?
No, I can't.
Were you engaged in the Battle for Crete?
Well, only indirectly. I was shot down, actually. We were sent out one afternoon to attack on some Italian bombers. They were not attacking the fleet, they were just passing the fleet. They probably didn't know the fleet was there. But unfortunately, I was shot down, but not directly shot down. I had a lot of things come into the cockpit and went back to the ship, which was about 50 miles away, and I knew that my engine would probably fail. At that time, the Mediterranean fleet didn't have a good reputation among Fleet Air Army aircrew for making a big effort to pick you up if you were shot down in the sea. But they were very nervous about sending the destroyers away from the fleet, because it took away their submarine protection and other things. Anyway, that might have been in my mind, but I managed to get my ship back over the Formidable and did a deck landing, which ended disastrously, because I went over the front end, having set fire to the ship on the way by hitting the island. I was then actually run over by the ship, and my observer was killed. But I was picked up by the Hereward and landed in Crete. And that was just before the Crete was taken, was attacked. In fact, it was fairly peaceful when I was landed there. But I was hit by several bullets, but not seriously. So I was made Yugoslavian liaison officer. But I was a spare part. And 6 Yugoslavian Heinkels landed in Suda Bay. and they were flown by six gentlemen who looked rather like Ivor the Velo.
What do you mean? Handsome?
Well, they were beautifully dressed. They wore breeches and swords and many medals and lovely hats and things. Anyway, I was not being much use for anything else. I was deputed to look after them, which I did for about 4 days. Well, and the only one word of English I understood was drink. And fortunately, all of us were on board an old BI transport that was in there, and there was a bar, and so I was able to look after them. I don't know what happened to them, but I met them twice in the war later on. Very nice men indeed.
Were they easy to look after?
Funny, we fed them with jet every now and again. We all got on splendidly. In fact, I think that had the war gone differently, I might have been given a medal for that by the Yugoslavian government, because I think I did more diplomatic drinking than most diplomats get medals for.
So when you were shot down, you actually went underneath the ship, did you?
I ran over.
Underneath the bows of the ship?
I was lucky. After that, I was put ashore for a very short time, and we did one more. Then I rejoined the squadron again, and we did a few more sorties. And eventually there, we were on some sort of exercise one day, and some Germans came along and bombed the ship, and she was hit fore and aft. I was actually in the operations room at the time, and as a result of that, the ship was also had to go to America to be repaired. So we, actually 803 Squadron, were spare parts, but we didn't waste our time. With our Fumos, we took part in the Syrian campaign, once again against the French, where they had their Teen 520s again, and they managed to knock down two of our airplanes. We then went to a place called Amria in the desert, which was known colloquially as the arsehole of the world. And there we picked up 12 Hurricanes and became an RAF Hurricane Squadron in the desert, where we operated. Because we were inexperienced in desert warfare, we were divided into two. My commanding officer led one flight, and I led the other, with different RAF squadrons. This only lasted a short time, but we had some experience in desert warfare.
Operating against whom?
The Germans. The Germans in the desert. They were then, it was very fluid then, they were mostly around Saloum, Badr area. But we operated from Mersa Matruh, Sidi Barani.
What was so bad about Amaria?
It was just bad, that's all.
What kind of targets with the Germans? Was it their panzers or what?
Tanks.
In lagers?
Well, we took part in one or two tank battles in which they were mobile, of course. Strafing mostly.
Were they easy to hit?
I should think so, yes.
Could you see whether you'd hit them or not?
No. I mean, you could see. Yes, you'd get a fair idea of whether you were going to hit them. Yes, you could.
Was there much anti-aircraft opposition?
Quite a lot of flak sometimes. It depends. It depends how busy they were. After a little while in the desert, we went back to Syria again with our Hurricanes. And we operated from a maize field, a cornfield, which we cut runways by cutting down the maize, which was all tall maize, and oiling the ground with dust. And that was done by the Royal Engineers. And we lived in the kibbutz at a place called Ramat David. That was a very happy period because the French Davantines were all pretty well being destroyed by then. And we were mostly doing army cooperation, work of various kinds, and establishing an air presence over Syria. We were the first people to land at Beirut when the French, I don't know whether they capitulated. Anyway, we were the first people to land at Beirut. I remember the French left a lot of nice little things on the runway to make punctures in our tires when we landed.
What kind of things?
Spiky things. There's a name for it. I've forgotten the name.
Booby traps?
Well, they were booby traps, weren't they? Somebody who tries to puncture your tires. We also stole an aeroplane, a Whitney Strait four-seater from the French at some stage. I remember we used that as a kind of squadron transport for quite a long time.
What was the attitude of the people in the kibbutz towards you?
Very friendly. We lived in tents in a fig orchard, but we used to have dinner with them every Saturday night, and they're most charming people.
Were they hospitable to you?
Yeah. Oh, very, yes, they're very nice people. They're all nationalities.
What did their attitude towards the war seem to be? Pro-Allied?
I don't think they gave a damn about the war. I went back there, strangely, in 1960. And what had been a maize field in which we threw our hurricanes was now one of the biggest military airfields in Israel, operating jets with concrete runways. But I found a fig orchard still there.
Did there seem to be any trouble between the Arabs and Jews whilst you were there?
Not the slightest. I'm sure there was, but we didn't notice it. We saw a lot of Arabs too. After that, we went back to the Cana in the Delta, and I was a bit worn out, and then I was sent home for a rest. I went home in the Mauritania to Durban, and then we changed to the Caledonia. I went to the Clyde.
How long did you have off before you returned to active service?
About 3 days. Well, apart from the journey home, which was rather nice, but I was given a fortnight's leave when I got home, and I was told that I was to go and command 802 Squadron, which was, that was a very interesting squadron. It was Mr. Churchill's idea that we should convert a merchant ship into an aircraft carrier to give fighter protection to our convoys against the Focke-Wulf Condors that were operating from French airfields and acting as reconnaissance and guiding the U-boats onto the convoys. And a very special squadron was formed, 802, with a man called John Winter, CO, who was a generation before me. He was a very fine man, an excellent pilot, and a very popular squadron commander. And this little ship, the German ship, the Hanover, was captured by us and was converted into an aircraft carrier. It was very small. It only had three arrestor wires. We called number one wire, number two wire, and for Christ's sake wire. And that pulled you up in 14 feet. But if you approached it 75 knots and got pulled up 14 feet, it was quite an experience. She had no hangar. All the aeroplanes were on deck and maintained on deck. And there was one barrier, so that you keep a deck park. Unfortunately, John Winter was killed very early on the way out to Gibraltar, and I was told to relieve him. I'd never flown them, but they had. They had F-4Fs, the American, wonderful standard fighter, Martlet, we called them, and the Americans called them the Wildcat. It was something quite new. It was very fast and a very good fleet fighter indeed. But I never flown one, so before I went out to Gibraltar, I was allowed to go to Leon Solent and fly one. But unfortunately, for various reasons, I only got one flight in. And I knew I had to deck land these damn things on a very small ship. Anyway, I went down to Plymouth, and where I went to Mountbatten. Well, I might say I was scared absolutely stiff, because that was at the time when Plymouth was being bombed rather a lot. And we had to wait 3 days for Sunderland to take us out of Gibraltar. And the Sunderland was commanded by a flying officer, Kyle, who I think was a Rhodesian. And the other passengers on board were I think he was a British ambassador to Morocco, and there was a brigadier who was going out to the Western Desert, and there was a young officer who was going to be an ADC to Lord Gort in Gibraltar, and me. And when we took off, we were all in what they call the wardroom, but I went up on the flight deck to talk to the pilot, as I was an aviator, and I noticed there was a big piece of armour plating up there behind the pilot, with a space in between the pilot and the armour plating. I took notice of this. Anyway, when I'd been very courteously shown round by the flying officer Kyle and his merry men, I went back to the wardroom where we sort of slept and played things. But sometime after lunch, it must have been tea time, I suppose, the ambassador was cutting a cake, an ordinary fruit cake in the wardroom, and I happened to look out of the porthole, or the scuttle, and I saw a Heinkel 115 coming along. So I said, excuse me, and went up on the flight deck and stood with this armour plate at my back, and we had a regular dogfight. There's an enormous aeroplane, Sunderland, and this Heinkel 115. And right on the deck, doing steep turns, really was quite exciting. And our rear turret was firing all the time. It was making an awful lot of noise. And cannon shells were actually bouncing off the wings of this Sunderland. Some of them were penetrating. And this went on for quite a long time. A magnificent effort by flying officer Kyle and flying this enormous machine. But after about, seemed to me like a day, but I suppose after about 10 minutes, the Heinkel just shoved off. And we went on to Gibraltar. Now, when I went back to the wardroom for my tea, I was a bit unpopular, because I deserted them. And there was two of those cannon shells had actually gone straight through the wardroom, but they had hit anybody at all. Eventually we arrived in Gibraltar, and my ship was there, the Audacity. She'd been renamed, the Audacity. Empire Audacity, she was known as, I believe, but her name actually was HMS Audacity. And the captain of it was an aviator called McKendrick. And we trundled one of these fighters through the streets of Gibraltar, out to the race course, so I could get some flying practice. And I did a bit of flying practice. And eventually, all the army seemed to spend all their time